The chorus on spending cuts gets louder as Congress starts to eye the federal debt ceiling.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The global perspective in a moment. First, there's likely to be a vote today in the U.S. House and Senate on the budget compromise that cuts billions of dollars from this year's federal spending. And it's a day after President Obama outlined his own long-term plans to trim the deficit with spending cuts and higher taxes on the wealthy. But the president didn't say anything about raising the debt ceiling. Indeed, some lawmakers are being more vocal about the possibility of voting no to raising the ceiling unless mandatory spending cuts are included. From Washington, here's Marketplace's David Gura.
In just a few weeks, the national debt is expected to reach $14.3 trillion. If some lawmakers attach conditions to borrowing more, that fight could lead to default.
The D word is very scary.
That's Guy Labaugh with financial services firm Janney Montgomery Scott. If the U.S. defaults, federal programs paid for with bonds could stop. Banks that hold treasuries would restrict lending, and experts say the economy could tank.
You know, you've got two parties driving towards each other at high speed. If nobody blinks, everybody loses big.
Banking consultant Bert Ely says this fight could go down to the wire.
But I think at the end of the day, everybody realizes that it would be very detrimental to the federal government and ultimately to the American taxpayer for any kind of actual outright default on federal debt.
We'll see who blinks first. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. The Swiss-based company Glencore wants to go public. Glencore is the world's largest commodities trader, and up to now, it's been a pretty secretive firm. So will going public and all the scrutiny that goes along with it hurt Glencore? From London, here's Christopher Wirth.
Glencore's $11 billion offering would be the largest in London's history, but the company's reputation for secrecy is part of what has allowed it to become a commodities giant. It got its start in the 1970s under Mark Rich, who was pardoned by President Clinton for charges of tax evasion and cutting deals with Iran. Today, it has big stakes in everything from zinc and copper to oil, coal, and natural gas, with $145 billion in sales last year. Angus Campbell is with London Capital Group. He says going public means Glencore will now have to be more open with investors. But will that hinder its ability to grow?
I think that actually it will have the exact opposite effect, in that the ability to be able to access funds from global investors will help the company to expand.
But the company doesn't seem to be all that worried about public relations. It's also announced that embattled former BP chief Tony Hayward could be taking a senior role in the company. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Stocks around the world are mostly lower right now. Fears that high food and fuel prices are pinching consumers and affecting corporate profits. Swiss pharmaceutical giant Roche said demand for its cancer drug Avastin fell in the first 3 months of the year. Later today, we'll get earnings from Google and toymaker Hasbro. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow tacked on about 7 points to close at 12,270.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, managing over $1.7 trillion in assets, providing investment solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. And by Manta.com, providing an online destination for small businesses to be found and to find new customers. More online at Manta.com. Marketplace Innovations Desk is supported by Jaguar. You can experience the 2011 Jaguar XJ at a local dealer or visit JaguarUSA.com.
In Cuba this weekend, the Communist Party Congress will mark 50 years since the failed U.S.-led Bay of Pigs invasion. And at the annual summit, Cuba's socialist leaders will ask the assembly to sign off on some free market economic reforms, including one measure that spawned a brand new class of private entrepreneurs. From Havana, reporter Grant Fuller filed this report.
In Baracoa, the oldest town in Cuba, it's festival time. There's reggaeton music and, as usual, state-run fried chicken stands. But also, young men run private roulette tables, women sell cookies and bubblegum, and a man carries around a rack of hats for sale. This is Cuban-style free enterprise at work. Last October, President Raul Castro promised to slash 500,000 jobs from Cuba's inflated government payroll. To cushion the blow of those job cuts, he announced a new venture into the private sector. More than 170,000 Cubans now have self-employment licenses for everything from carpentry to childcare.
This is the best thing the Cuban government has done to help us.
Lázaro Delgado got one of the new permits to sell flowers on the street in Havana.
They're giving everyone the chance to work, helping us all start doing something. We can do anything we want as long as we keep our part of the bargain. The state is giving us a chance to make it.
But don't forget, it's still communist Cuba, and taxes are sky high. Small business owners give back up to 40% of their annual income, and they pay a high monthly fee on top of that. There's also a lack of startup capital. Government banks announced a plan to provide limited credit for the self-employed, but that program has yet to get rolling. I'm talking to a woman who works at a Havana office that issues the new licenses. She refuses to give her name for fear of losing her job. She says many Cubans have become so fed up with the slow pace of change that they've returned to her office to give their licenses back.
They thought having their own business would make things better, but they can't come out on top because the taxes are so high. So people are giving up their licenses more than the government expected.
The new business owners hope this weekend's Communist Party Congress will be a chance to further tweak the system in their favor. In Havana, I'm Grant Fuller for Marketplace.
And finally, Virgin Airlines owner Richard Branson will finally honor the bet he made with AirAsia CEO Tony Fernandez. The two wagered last year on whose race team would finish higher in the 2010 Bahrain Formula One Grand Prix. Branson lost the bet. So AirAsia just announced a May 1st charity flight between London and Kuala Lumpur. One of the flight attendants will be Branson himself, with shaved legs, a red AirAsia dress, high heels, and tray in hand to serve drinks and snacks to the plane's 250 guests. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles, online at marketplace.org and on Twitter at Marketplace Radio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The collective hope in Japan is that destruction could lead to rebirth in every possible way.
Change, chaos, crisis often precedes huge leaps of entrepreneurship and innovation.
I'm Tess Vigeland, rebuilding and rethinking recovery, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.